Hello, this is Esperanza Phoenix, and welcome to Unpacking Life's Crazy, a podcast about a lifetime of unfortunate, unusual, and enlightening experiences, and how some of us use humor and hope to survive mental illness. In our podcast, we discuss controversial and adult topics. We are all adults here. There will be swearing. If you're joining me on the podcast, I highly encourage you to check this one out on my YouTube channel. I hope to do something kind of interesting this time, and I'll let you be surprised when you see it, but I'll give you a hint. My life's motto has always been, there are no such thing as bad hair days, just good hat days. All you have to do is go to YouTube and search for Esperanza Phoenix or Unpacking Life's Crazy. It should also come up. Check it out on YouTube, like and subscribe to my channel. So before we get on with the rest of this podcast, I have a couple of news items that I would like to talk about. Good news only this time. And the first good news item is a biggie. President Biden has now made arrangements to purchase enough vaccine to vaccinate all Americans. Now, this probably won't happen until summer because it's not like the vaccine already exists. They still have to make it and obviously distribute it, but it is coming. So provided we don't have any crazy mutations with the virus, it sounds like we may have a way to prevent serious illness by the end of summer. So things may be getting back to normal, and yay, traveling again and all of that. So yay, I'm so excited for the vaccine. Unfortunately, summer is still a ways out. So I have another bit of good coping news. New Orleans has found a creative solution because obviously Mardi Gras can't go on with the parades and the people in the street and all of that. It just isn't safe. They came up with a super cool idea. They are doing something called house floats. So people are decorating their homes in these crazy elaborate ways, and the companies that build the floats and do all that decorating, I guess, are still getting the business because people are hiring them to make their houses into these elaborate displays, and they're just gorgeous. I encourage you to go online and look up house floats in New Orleans. I've heard that over 300 houses have done it so far, and so people can drive through like, you know, they do with Christmas Tree Lane or whatever, only, you know, you're not limited to Christmas theme. This is Mardi Gras. So they're crazy stuff going on, and at night they've got music and displays like that too. I find the resilience in communities to just be delightful. As I'm recording this episode, we have just come out of Valentine's Day weekend, and I hope you all had a lovely Valentine's Day. But this is also my birthday week. This is a pretty big birthday because it is the last of my 40s. And my boyfriend joked the other night, well, I guess I'll have to give you your birthday spanking. And I realized that I have reached an age where a birthday spanking is a burden to my partner and may result in arm soreness the following day. Yes, that's a lot of spankings. That inspired me to do this episode because I am a woman of many hats. How many? Well, you'll just have to watch to find out. So that had me looking back on all of the hats that I have worn in my lifetime. And in this instance, I mean metaphorically. How many jobs have I had in my lifetime? You may not believe it, but I'm about to go through and tell you about all of them. And you can also count the hats. So there's that. The very first job I ever worked was when I was about 5 or 6 years old. And I worked retail, helping my father on the powwow circuit. I've talked a little bit about my childhood in other podcasts. My father's Native American. My history with my parents is pretty ugly, and my father's a horrible person. However, the fact that he was an artist and he traveled the powwow circuit gave me a lot of unique experiences as a child. But as a not very responsible parent who didn't really care anything about what was child appropriate or safe, I often had to tend the booths. It was just he and I. We'd unpack from the van, we'd set up the booth, and then he would sell his artwork, mostly jewelry. And if he had to go use the bathroom or wanted to make a business deal or something like that, he would leave me to watch the booth. So if we had any customers come, I would have to deal with taking money and giving change and explaining about things. And, you know, you lose a sale, you don't get enough money, you don't eat that night. So I consider that my first job, but I wasn't being paid for it. My next job was as a film extra. My father was a member of SAG, and he did some acting here and there. He had some background roles. But when Little House on the Prairie would come into town, they needed child extras. And apparently, my father signed me up for that. And I got to meet the main characters. And sometimes they would do like stickball, or the kids would just get together and play in between scenes. I don't really remember a whole lot about it. I remember that I got to meet Michael Landon once, and he was a really sweet human being. So I value that part of the experience. That was cool. But apparently there was money exchanged. I didn't know that part, but I guess my dad was making some money off me. Kind of typical of him, but it was an experience. My next job was typical. I worked as a babysitter. A lot of us do babysitters. So there was a neighbor up the road, and I would babysit for them occasionally. And in that time frame, I probably did some pet sitting too. And that was something that I would enjoy into my teenage years as random work. I would house sit or pet sit. My next job, I worked as an assistant cook on a rafting camp. I worked on the Kings River. That entailed having to make shopping trips with the cook, and we'd get all of the ingredients. It would be 3 carts worth of food. And then we'd take those back to the rafting camp, and I would have to do prep work. So one of the things I remember vividly is I would have to peel and finely chop 3 heads of garlic every day. And I would also have to prepare the we'd make a cheese ball that they could have with crackers or bread or whatever. So that was one of the prep things that I had to do. And I didn't get to do the fun part of going down the river. But yeah, that's how I spent the summer. Gosh, actually, I think that was the summer before I went into high school, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, because I had this hideous perm. I tried to get a perm before my 8th grade graduation, and it was, I think most of us have like tried a perm and done that awful thing. Yeah, that was the year that I did that. So that summer I had the worst hairdo ever, and I didn't have a lot of hats to cover it up. So it was kind of sad, but highly inappropriate because I was not supervised at all. I was 14 years old, camping on the side of a river, all adults in the camp. And so as soon as my duties were over, then I would take off and I would go to the neighboring camp. The staff of that camp, all of the guides in that camp, were marvelously talented. They could sing and play instruments. And every night after they had their dinner, they would gather around the fire and they would do a sing-along. And I remember particularly there was this one guy who had it was a metal guitar, I think it's called a dobro, and he lay it flat on his lap, and it just had the most beautiful sound. And that was the summer that I discovered the Beatles and the Beach Boys. So I was listening to them nonstop. And I remember that this one guy, I asked him if I could make a request, and he was afraid because he figured I was young and I would request something that he couldn't play. And I was like, I just want you to play Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. And he was like, oh, I know that one. And it was beautiful. It's beautiful. So I spent a lot of time hanging out over there and being highly inappropriate. I was drinking. I was hanging out with guys. It was not, it was, looking back as a mother, I look back and go, oh my God, who knows what could have happened to me. But I survived. I survived. And upon returning home after the summer, I started high school. And that year, I also got my first job. So I was 15. I should have needed a work permit and all of that, but I was working completely under the table for a restaurant called the Europa. And I was working as a bus person. I was making less than minimum wage because I was under the table. They didn't have to pay me minimum wage. I bussed the tables. I refilled coffee. I, you know, grabbed things the waitresses. Oh, that table needs a piece of pie, whatever. I brought out food. I did everything except taking the orders, basically. There were some weird things about working there. For example, and this is another highly inappropriate thing that wouldn't happen today because people have a better understanding of sexual harassment and the Me Too movement and stuff. But they often use prisoners as firefighters in the summertime. And when the fires would break out, they would take these inmate crews to fight the fires. And one of the perks for the inmates is they get to go out and eat and choose what they want off the menu. So that's a pretty exciting thing for them. And the inmate crews would come and they would be put into the side dining room. Well, I was in charge of refilling waters and coffees and things like that. So yeah, the inmates got especially thirsty when I was having to fill their glasses. And I was only 15 years old and they were ogling me and it was super creepy. It was really very creepy. So that was the least pleasant thing about that particular job. I have to take a moment here to reflect on a problem that I was not aware of at that time. And it would only get worse. I suffer from anxiety. I've suffered from anxiety my entire life, but I only really recently discovered it. And you can hear a little more about that in the podcast, Into the Weeds About Shrooms, and also Into the Weeds About Weed. I talk a little bit about my anxiety problems. But like I said, I was not aware of that. I'd lived in a constant state of anxiety since childhood. So I didn't really realize that I had anxiety or how much it would affect my ability to participate in the job market, to have a career, to work and function as a normal human being. So I'm going to continue and tell you about these other jobs that I've had. But keep in mind, the reason why I had so many was in part the anxiety because I would panic. I would leave because I was afraid of getting fired, for example. So just keep that in the back of your mind as I continue to tell you about all of the weird stuff that I've done. So my next job was fairly ordinary. I worked as a housekeeper at both the Fallon Hotel and the City Hotel in Columbia State Historic Park. So I had to be there, I think it was at 7 a.m. I had to get there and I had to dress in period costume because anybody who works in the park has to fit in as if you're old-timey person. And the first thing we would do is prepare the continental breakfast. And then we would go to clean the rooms. And it's not easy work. Housekeeping's not easy work. But one of the grossest things about that job is they didn't provide us with a toilet scrubber. So what we had to do is we would go into the bathroom, you know, you clear out all the dirty towels and all of that kind of stuff. And then you would take one of the wash rags that had been used in the bathroom and you would have to put the cleaner in the toilet and you would have to stick your hand in the toilet and scrub the inside of the toilet with one of the wash rags from the room. I assume it gets superheated and really disinfected when it gets washed, but we didn't get provided with gloves or anything. So I had to stick my hand in the toilet every day I worked and that was super gross. Oh my gosh, it was nasty. And the other thing is that both the Fallon and City Hotel are haunted. And I experienced some weird stuff when I worked there. I'm not really going to go into it because I'll save that for a Halloween episode. But there's some spooky stuff that goes on in both of those historical hotels. So that was weird too. Also, at the time, I had started volunteering in theater. My first paid job at the Fallon House Theater was working in the box office. So I would kind of run back and forth between being at the hotel and then also being in the box office. And by that time I was 16 because I had a vehicle so I could get there and do that. And then I was participating in shows at the time as well. For a good portion of the time I was working at the theater, I wasn't actually getting paid to be there. I didn't love housekeeping, but I found another job in the park, and that was working at the Degrassi Photo Studio. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to a Degrassi Photo Studio, but those are the ones that do like the old-timey photos where they dress you in costumes and all of that. But when I was working there, it was the traditional photo method. So you had to costume people, which was fun. I really liked that. You know, the kids would get so into it. And you dress them up as a cowboy or a sheriff or an Indian. Yeah. And saloon girls and school marms and whatever. We had all these costume things and we get them all dressed up. And it was funny because they would always fuss about what color the costume was, which was ridiculous because all of them were going to be in black and white or sepia. And sepia is like that sort of brown tone. So there's no color. It's just kind of it's a yellowish black and white photo. So because we would use the traditional method and probably not like the oldest of cameras, because you used to have to sit really, really still. And that's why if you look at the really old photographs of people, they look so stern because nobody could hold a natural smile long enough to take the photo. And if you moved, because the exposure took so long, the frame would, the camera would have to open up and expose to the light a lot longer than it does now. So if you moved, it would blur out the photo and ruin it. And you just had to sit really still for that moment when the camera was taking the picture. So they would use those traditional things. And then afterwards, we would have to develop it in the traditional way. And that was really stinky. They used these weird chemicals and it always smelled like rotten eggs in the back. We still had to wear a costume because I was still in the State Historic Park. I had a slightly different costume. But yeah, basically had to wear an old-timey uniform in order to work there. And because the Degrassi Studio was owned by the same people who owned the leather shop, that was also part of my job. And so when they went to lunch, I would have to go from the photo place over to the leather shop and babysit that so that they could take their lunch hour. So I was working both of those places in the State Historic Park. And that was about the time that I was kicked out of my house. My mother wasn't pleased with things. My mother had some mental instabilities, let's just put it that way. So I was asked to leave, and then she felt bad, so she paid for my dorms. So I at least had a place to stay. So I was staying at the dorms. I was taking college classes. Oh, I graduated high school early. I took the California High School Proficiency Test, so I was officially graduated, and I went on to take some college courses. So I was attending college, and then I was working at the leather shop and the photo studio and the theater, and most of my courses were in the theater, which eventually would work into some paid position. So after I left the leather shop and the photo studio, and I'm not sure why I left. I can't. It was a long time ago. Who knows what caused me to panic and leave that job? Maybe it was the stinky eggs. But the next job I would do, I got a job working at Kenny's Shoe Source. We had one of those locally. And I found that job difficult for a couple of reasons. The first was they always pressure, the boss would pressure me to make extra sales. They want you to sell sneaker cleaner and they want you to sell socks and they want you to sell shoelaces and they want you to have add-on items when people come in to buy shoes. And a woman would come in with like five kids, and she was trying to get shoes put on all of these kids, and she clearly could not afford to put the shoes on the kids, right? She's looking at all the sales things. She's trying to find a way to get the kid to be happy with the shoe, but it's not a color they want, but it's what she can afford. And on top of that, the boss would get cranky with me if I didn't put pressure on her to add other items to her purchase. And it made me sad. I wasn't able to do that, so I would wind up getting yelled at because I didn't pressure her I didn't pressure the sale. It went against my ethics at 16 years old to pressure this poor mother. So that was the first part that was a little bit difficult about the job. But the reason that I left, and again, this is another thing that would not happen today. And I probably could have made some really good money if it took place today. The boss was a creeper. He was a seriously creepy dude. He was probably in his 50s. And he had what I refer to as dog moles. You know those big moles that stick out and like have their own hairs? He had those on his face, and he was fat and creepy, and he would make extremely inappropriate remarks about my body. If I bent over to pick up shoes, he'd make comments about my butt. He would talk about my cleavage. It was really, really gross. And he also knew that I was financially desperate and struggling to feed myself. And so he knew that I was in a situation where I couldn't exactly just quit. And he made offers to have me come clean his house, air quotes, when his wife wasn't there. So basically, he wanted me to prostitute myself for extra money. And I laughed it off, and I avoided him, and I did what I could to just be away from the situation. But as I said, I'm 16 years old. I'm living on my own. I didn't have a support system. I didn't have a grown-up to tell me that that wasn't okay, or that I should sue his ass or defend me in any way. So I eventually couldn't handle it anymore, and I left. So that is the reason why I left that particular job. And before I left that job, I got another job at a place called La Sierra Taqueria. And I worked in the back doing prep work for the cook. So prepping the taco meat and the ingredients and all of that stuff and getting all of that ready. And then sometimes I would go up front and take the orders as well. And that job, of course, it's a restaurant. So they want you there late at night, sometimes closing and all of that. As we're talking, I'm realizing I've there's a lot of jobs that aren't on this list. So La Sierra Taqueria didn't work out at that time because I was doing a lot of theater. So in order to get theater credit at the college, you would have to also participate in the productions. And I was doing a lot of productions which required night rehearsal and a lot of late nights at the theater. So obviously a restaurant job wouldn't work. So that's why I left that restaurant job. And now I have to go back in time because I forgot that I also worked as a busser for a brief time at a place called Brawley's. Is it Brawley's? Yeah, it was called Brawley's. Sorry. It's changed names many times over the years, and there is still a restaurant in that location to this day. But I, for a time, a brief time, before I was kicked out of the house, I worked as a bus person at Brawley's as well. But that came to an abrupt end the night the dishwasher quit, because I was underage, so I had a curfew. I had to be home by a certain time. And the dishwasher quit, and the owner or manager comes to me and says, "Oh, you're the dishwasher tonight." And I was like, "What? What do you mean? I am supposed to be off in 5 minutes and I have to go home." So I spent 3 hours in the kitchen because the dishwasher said, "Screw this, fuck you all." And he left with mountains of filthy dishes. I'd never washed dishes before. So I get immediate training on how to be a dishwasher, and I am left there like Cinderella for 3 hours. And if you Most of you have probably never been in a restaurant kitchen and never been exposed to the sink or this spray thing. So they have this pull down thing and you squeeze it and then it's got high pressure spray and that water is like really, really fucking hot. So you bring that to, and you got to rinse everything off first. I was soaking wet. I was soaked to the bone by the time I got done that night. And I did what they said. So I finally get done. I'm soaking wet. I get in my car. I go to drive home. I'm exhausted. And I guess I moved into the wrong turn lane. Anyways, I drove a little weird because it was so late and I didn't know what I was doing. And I was really tired. And I got pulled over. So this is one of the first times in my life that I had been pulled over by the highway patrol and I was terrified and I got reamed for being out past curfew. And I was so scared that I was going to be arrested or something. And it was all because of this ridiculous situation. So that is why I left Brawley's. So when I left Sierra Taqueria, I was doing a lot of work at the theater and some of it paid, some of it unpaid. Most of it unpaid, but it was a wide variety of things. As I mentioned before, I did box office and of course acting, that was part of my studies, but I also assisted with costumes. And the most awkward part of that is when we did a large cast show, I would have to help with the measurements. That doesn't sound particularly weird, but when you're 16, 17 years old, I think I was still 16 when I started, but there's a measurement that you need to do on men, which is called the end seam, which is basically from the inside crotch to their ankle. And you have to ask the awkward question of which side do you dress? To which side do you dress? Which means what side do you keep your dick on? It's very awkward. It's very awkward. It's like, to which side do you dress? But of course, this is volunteer theater. And most of these men and young men have never been measured for a costume in their life. So they don't know what that means. So it's like, what side do you put your junk? Because I don't want to be bumping up against it when I put the tape measure up against you. It's like, okay. This is super awkward. So that was a little weird. But I didn't do a lot of sewing. Sometimes I would do hand sewing stuff because I wasn't real proficient with the machines. But like sewing on buttons or details or things like that, sometimes I would help out with. I was working with sets. So I would help with the set construction. I also helped backstage during shows. So that would be like changing the set over. Sometimes it was costume changes. So people would rush to the back. I remember the most labor intensive was when we did Steel Magnolias, because Steel Magnolias had so many elaborate hairstyles that kept changing. When we did Into the Woods, and that was funny because I actually had to drive a chicken. There was a remote control RC car and they put a nest on top of it and a chicken on top of that. And I had to drive this chicken on and around the stage. And it was really difficult because if I were to drive the RC car off the stage into the audience, it would have been a really big problem. But I also did sound. I had a disastrous sound experience when we were doing Driving Miss Daisy. Talk about anxiety. I'm going to take just a moment to relate this because it is a vivid example of just how bad my anxiety was. Before you had all this digital recording thing, you had tape that would go from one reel to another on this big machine, and then it would play against the playhead, and that's what your sound was recorded on. And it was spliced weird because sometimes you would have to cut things, they would rearrange it, and they hadn't done the final edit because it was the final dress rehearsal night, and there were some things that still needed to be worked out. So the tape wasn't finished cutting, and there was a bad spot in the middle. So one of the things, this old machine, in order to fast forward, you had to stick in this weird piece of wooden wedge that would keep the tape from running against the reader. And because it wasn't spliced correctly, there was this section that I had to fast forward past to get to the next spot for the next cue. If you've ever seen Driving Miss Daisy, it's the scene where there's been an ice storm and a blackout. So she's lighting candles in the dark. And it's this really quiet, tranquil scene. And what's supposed to be playing, it's supposed to open up with these plink, 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 plink sounds. And meanwhile, I'm trying to get to the plink, plink cue when we're on the complete blackout. And I forgot to stick in that wedge. So I push the fast forward button and the entire audience hears really fucking loud. And I was mortified. I thought I was going to die of embarrassment and shame. I just thought I was going to die. I managed to get through the rest of the cues. I wouldn't even look at anybody. The technical director, who is the one who spliced the tape, blamed himself and apologized and stuff. But no, I blamed myself. And I quite literally, I went home that night and I started crying. And I was in hysterics. And I cried for 8 hours. I don't even know how I didn't dehydrate and die. And the next day I called my doctor, and that's when I was put on antidepressants for the first time. And I remained on antidepressants of one kind or another until last year. But the main problem in that event was anxiety. Super, super high anxiety. And oh my God, that was the worst experience ever. Okay. I also ran Spotlight for some shows. And eventually I was getting paid for the set work and all of that stuff. But at that time, I wasn't a full-time employee, so I had to have other jobs. One of those jobs was at Wendy's. And the Wendy's job did not last very long at all. After Wendy's, I worked probably my first like official job, and that was as a bagger at Save Mart. And I say it was the first official job is because it was one of those jobs where you had to be, gosh, I don't even remember the term for it. I'm going to say vetted, but that isn't right. They basically checked my criminal background and my fingerprints and stuff because it's like a big corporation. And then I had to go do training in Modesto. And again, I had anxiety. I remember being so freaked out about the whole thing. So I had to go to this training course where I watched videos about how to bag groceries. And I don't know if they still do this. They actually had bagging competitions. I don't know if you ever watched the TV series, My Name is Earl, but there's something about a bagger's competition in that. Oh my gosh, it brought back memories. So that was the bagging portion of the job. But the other portion of the job was stocking shelves. And so I jumped through the hoops, I did the training thing, and I started my job at Save Mart. And then my anxiety struck with a really bad day. It was the same kind of thing with having one person tell you to stock shelves and then you get called up to bag. So you start bagging and then the person who told you to stock the shelves gets mad at you because you didn't finish stocking the shelves. And then somebody else is asking you to do something else. So all that was going on and I was pretty stressed out. And it was summertime and I go to help somebody out to their car with the groceries and they had a watermelon and it was on the bottom of the cart. So we go to and it just went rolling. It rolled right off into the parking lot and like just smashed. And I was like, oh my God, I'm a total failure. I suck as a human being. I'm going to die. And I went in and I resigned. I quit. I couldn't take it. Now looking back on it, it's really not that big a deal. It was just one watermelon. And coming at it from a perspective of somebody who now has their anxiety under control, I realize, you know, so what? But again, from the perspective then, it was devastating. It was devastating. So that was my last day. That was my last day working as a bagger. During this time, I was also working randomly as an extra in certain films. And it was a long time ago. I don't remember a lot of it. So there was a movie that was filmed in Colombia, Radio Flyer. I remember being an extra in... there's a pilot for something called The Young Guns. So there was a handful of movies. It used to really be quite popular for them to film in the area. Unfortunately, I missed out on getting to be in Back to the Future 3, which filmed up there. I still love watching the movie, though, because when I watch, every time there's a crowd scene, I'm like, oh, there's Chris. Oh, look, there's Maria. Oh, look. And it's super cool. So I really enjoy getting to participate as an extra and getting to see all that kind of back behind the scenes stuff. Believe it or not, all of this stuff, I was 16. So near the end of my 16th year, I had fallen madly in love with an actor. His name was Ronald Sharp. He happened to be Jamaican Canadian, gorgeous, funny, just spoke French. I was swept off my feet. But like I said, he was Jamaican Canadian and he had to go back to Canada. It's a very long story. But me being a lovesick teen, I decided to drive to Canada and follow him there. And I talk about that in my podcast, Kindness of Strangers. I'm not going to go into that. But while I was in Canada, I had a job. And that job was phone sales for cookbooks of all things. So I'd have to cold call people and try to sell them this collection of cookbooks. And then if they bought them, I had to deliver these cookbooks. And that didn't last long. I am not good at sales. I'm really not good at sales. I'm not good at pressuring people. I'm not good at making people want to buy something they don't want to buy. You like art, please come to my Etsy shop. Look at my artwork. If you like it, buy it. No pressure. I'm like, here, you should really have this. You need to have. No, I'm just not good at it. But in that short time that I was in Canada, I did work in book sales. It didn't go well. I didn't make much commissions. And I was only there a couple of months before the cold weather set in and I didn't have a real job and whatever. And I had to take a bus. I had to go crying to my mother and she bought me a bus ticket and I had to take a Greyhound bus from Winnipeg, Manitoba, back to California. So upon returning from my adventure in Canada, I actually was hired on to the theater as a part-time employee. And that was my main job for a little while. So doing all those crazy things, doing the backstage, and I was generally, my job was working in set construction. But, you know, I got lots of crazy experience. One of the things we did that summer is we went to the college because the college was tied with the theater. So we had use of college equipment and we went to the shop there, the metalwork shop, and we had to construct these metal brackets. So we had to weld. We had to cut metal and then we had to weld these pieces together. And then once the pieces were welded, we had to sand off any of the welding joints that were weird. So we spent a long time in the shop that summer working on this weld project. So because of that, I have some experience in welding and I'm actually not too bad at it. We did so many really weird, really cool set construction things. I really enjoyed the problem solving in that period of my life. It was a lot of fun. After I came back from Canada and I was no longer dating Ronald, I started dating the assistant technical director and eventually we got married. So we got married right after I turned 18. So you can there's the kind of the timeline where we're at now. Yeah, all this is before I was 18. I know that's kind of, looking back, it's kind of crazy. So we got married and we wound up buying a real fixer-upper in the town of Angels Camp. And the one in charge of costumes, our costume person at the theater, her husband worked at New Maloney's Lake Marina. And I was able to get a job there working what I'd hoped when I was originally hired. What I'd hoped is I would be a cashier in their boat rental area. But because they needed extra work, I wound up being a housekeeper for the houseboats. And so housekeeping again, it's like a house, but smaller and you have to do it a lot faster because there's a whole bunch of them. So that was rough, especially if somebody got like really messy and the stove was a mess. And, you know, I remember the absolute worst was after a bachelor party. Yeah. The tape we found in the VCR, that was a seriously nasty porno, and somebody had decided to shave their pubes in the bathroom. So there were pubes everywhere. It was so disgusting. Ew. And condoms, not in the garbage. I mean, come on, people. So I needed to find another part-time job. And so that job was at Angel's Bakery. There was a really nice man, Don, who had been a bread baker in San Francisco. And he had this dream of owning his own bakery. And so he bought this little bakery in Angel's Camp. But mostly, you know, he just wanted to bake. He didn't want to have to deal with customers. He didn't want to deal with cakes. Cakes drove him crazy, but it was sort of the bedrock of the business. People kept wanting to order cakes for birthdays and all that sort of thing. So by default, being artsy, he made me do the cake decorating. So I became a cake decorator, and I also worked the counter. The worst thing about that job was it was a bakery. So I had to be up at the crack of dawn. Now, I've always hated mornings. I am not a morning person at all. And then coming from having done theater, it's all night stuff, and I was still doing theater. I mean, I wasn't getting paid enough to stay working in the shop and stuff, but I would still do shows. And so that meant if I was rehearsing for a show, that meant sometimes the rehearsals would go until 11, 12, you know, if it was tech week, sometimes 1 a.m. we'd be rehearsing, but I had to be at work at the bakery at 7 a.m. So that wasn't a lot of fun. So after leaving Angel's Bakery, my next job was the first professional opportunity I missed due to anxiety, actually. I went to work for a little place called Rana Blueprint and Copy. Primarily, I helped people with their copy needs. I also learned to make blueprints. And if you've never seen a blueprint machine, it's kind of crazy. It's this long strip of a thing, and then you feed the machine. It's like a long flat metal strip thing with a gap. And then you feed the drawn out blueprints along with sort of a negative. It's a piece of paper, a big piece of paper that's treated with chemicals. And there's ammonia involved. I don't know how it all works, but you feed the long, flat, big drawing along with this blank treated piece of paper in through this machine. And because of the chemical reaction, it comes out blue on the other side, and it's taken the copy of whatever it is you sent it through. So it's a long process. It was hot in that room, and it smelled of ammonia really bad. So the blueprint part of it was not fun. And then the secondary part of that was of the job was doing some minor graphics work. So people would come in. Usually it was restaurants that needed their menus updated. So we had some files, and we would change their menus or their prices and then make up a whole bunch of copies of their menus for them. And the boss was happy with the job that I was doing. But what he wanted to do, what he offered to do actually, was to send me to be trained so that I could have graphics training, and I could have training on all these machines and all of that, so that I could eventually maybe be a manager for him. Except my anxiety, I just found that absolutely terrifying. I didn't think I could possibly do it. I didn't want him to invest money in me and then fail and disappoint him. The other part of that was that I had begun, my husband and I had begun discussing having kids. So I didn't think it was fair to him for me to go get the training and then have kids and then decide I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. But I did want a better paying job. So I took a test and I qualified, and I signed up with county schools in order to be a teacher's aide. And what you do first is you are a substitute. I've mentioned before, I don't care for mornings, but when you're working as a substitute, it's even worse because you never know when you're going to work. So if somebody calls in sick and they need a substitute, they have a list that they'll go through, and they'll call you at like 6:30 in the morning and go to a school that you maybe have never been to before. You don't know how it all works. You don't know where the classroom is. Talk about anxiety. Oh my God. Oh, so I worked for a little bit as a substitute teacher's aide, and then I got hired on permanent. And I got hired on in a resource class at a school in San Andreas. And that was actually fine, except by then I was pregnant with my daughter. But as my pregnancy progressed, I wound up getting tendonitis in my crotch. It's a thing. So I wound up having to leave work sooner than expected. So during that time, I worked one really odd job, and this is probably one of the weirdest jobs I ever did. And I posed as a nude model for the art class at the college when I was 7 months pregnant, because that's a very interesting body for people to sketch. However, I do not recommend being a nude model unless you have a whole lot of body confidence, because you know how they say that the camera adds 10 pounds? I think college students add at least 20 because they seem to be very fascinated with roles. I didn't think I was that chunky until I saw their sketches, which was really rather disheartening. And when you're already feeling huge pregnant, it wasn't a lot of fun. But I did it. It was decent pay. I think I made like $25 for the hour. But also, I was starting to have my pain issues with fibromyalgia back then. I didn't really realize it at the time, but having to sit in the same position for any period of time was quite uncomfortable. So sitting that hour, it actually hurt. They have you sit in one position for like, I don't know, it's 10 or 15 minutes. Then they have you change positions and they tell you, you know, find a position that's going to be comfortable, and you think it is. But the longer it possesses it, the longer it progresses, the more uncomfortable it becomes, and you find itches. You know, things start to itch because you're not allowed to scratch. It's a really weird thing. I wasn't in the job force for quite some time. I was a full-time mommy, and I'd help out with the occasional theater thing, and I was pursuing the idea of becoming an author and an illustrator. So I was writing children's stories, and I was drawing for them. Unfortunately, that is a dream that has not yet been realized. But hey, I'm not dead yet. Who knows? Anything could happen. But I had a lot of focus on that. I wrote quite a few children's stories. And actually, I have a podcast episode specifically for storytelling. And if you go listen to that, you'll hear some of my children's stories. And it's kid safe. Most of my podcasts are not kids safe. There will be swearing, but that is one that is kids safe. So if you do want to hear my kids' stories, go look up that podcast. So during that time of not being officially employed, I did apply and get a job as a correspondent for the Union Democrat, which is the newspaper in my hometown. So I got to cover things like Irish Days in Murphy's and the Frog Jump, and that was fun. So I get to interview the Miss Calaveras contestants and do a bit about the jumping frog thing and the art show and all of that kind of thing. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed acting as a correspondent. After I had my kids, I was able to get into a program that retains you for the workforce. And I had decided to study computer graphics because I wanted to write and illustrate children's books, and I had dreamed of doing these computer graphics for it. That was my thing. So I got some training. So at one point, the theater finally, it failed. And there was a time then when my husband was unemployed. He went into the theater as a teenager, actually, and that had been the only job he ever worked. So he decided he was going to take a brief time off and try to write. He always wanted to be a writer. And when my husband left the workforce, I wound up getting this job with Calaveras Press. and, you know, just minor stuff like editing newsletters, doing layout for programs for the theaters, those kinds of little graphics tasks. That company merged with Gold Rush Printing. Gold Rush, Calaveras Press, they became one business and moved into downtown Angels Camp. When I started, they were in Arnold. And so I was working as the assistant graphic artist. There was a head graphic artist. I was assistant. And then I also had other tasks. And one of those tasks was stripping. So I have been a stripper, but not that kind of stripper. Film stripping is when they print out the film and then you have to put it on these metal sheets and then it gets developed in this machine and then it has to be rinsed. And those big metal sheets then get put into the printer. So I worked for this company, and the coolest thing about the company is they had a Heidelberg. Now, Heidelberg is this amazing printing press. It's a monster of a printing press. And if you the name sounds familiar, they talk about it in the movie Catch Me If You Can. So I worked briefly at the print company, but my husband really belonged in the workforce more so than at home parenting. He wound up going to work for a heating and air company. And I wound up back with the home with the kids. Because of my history, I didn't feel real comfortable leaving my children in the care of anyone, really. I mean, my children were not babysat often. Usually they were only left with their father or their grandparents, or I had a couple of trusted friends. So I had to find a job that was on a schedule that didn't interfere with him working. And I wound up getting a part-time job at a restaurant called the B of A Cafe. And so I, you know, worked the counter, served desserts, became a barista. They have one of those fancy coffee machines, the old fashioned kind of espresso machines where you had to lock in these little things and those metal pipes coming out, spraying hot steam. I cannot even count the number of times I got burned by that thing. Oh my gosh. So I worked at the B of A Cafe until that owner sold. And I was really happy because she was an extremely unpleasant person. but the new owners, Steve and Kathy, were really lovely people. Unfortunately, they didn't have any experience opening and running a restaurant, which would become a problem. But their original business was running karaoke shows. So they had all the equipment and they would travel to bars and stuff and they would run karaoke shows. So when they took over the restaurant, they also started doing karaoke shows. So in addition to first starting as a waitress and then working my way up to becoming their night manager because they trusted me so much, I also worked as their substitute KJ because of my sound experience in theater. So when they were out of town, I would run the karaoke machine and host the karaoke for them when they were away. So restaurant into KJ stuff, and that was really the most fun part of the job. But as I said, they had no experience in restaurants, and so a series of unfortunate events, including a fire that went through and burnt the flume nearby, which affected the water supply, which affected tourism. There was this whole thing that happened at the time. And they wound up basically closing the restaurant down to almost nothing and like doing burgers and stuff. And they didn't need me anymore. I started working at a restaurant up the hill in Arnold, which was a little bit tricky though, because Arnold was a lot further from Angels Camp. So having to wait till that last minute when my husband arrived to take over watching the kids to rush up the hill. Sometimes I was late and it was a problem. So everything was kind of in flux at the time. And as I said, I was really interested in becoming a writer and an illustrator. So I had some money set aside that was supposed to go to my attending the Writers and Illustrators Conference. There is a Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators. And if you're interested in writing for kids, I highly recommend joining. It is really cool. And every year they have a national conference in Los Angeles. And I am fortunate enough to have been able to attend a couple of times. Anyways, I had saved up money to do the conference again, but here everything was in flux financially. I have to give you a little bit of background on one of the weirder things about me. One of the strange gifts that I have always had is I have a way with energy with my hands, this thing. I've often given people massage, you know, people's feet hurt or their shoulders hurt or the neck hurt or whatever. And I would just naturally put my hands on them and be able to give them a massage and make them feel better. And the one of the owners of the Gold Frog, he actually has a weird disorder where his discs fuse together. So he would have a lot of neck pain. And one of the things he would do sometimes, he'd be like, I am in just so much pain. I will pay you $5. Just work on my neck for a few minutes. Just please work your magic. Do your thing, please. And so I would earn some extra money by working on the owner's neck, doing some massage for him. And I actually enjoyed it. I enjoy being able to help people in that way. And it was just, I had just massaged on people at random as long as I could remember, starting with like my grandmother's feet. So at this weird junction, people had told me for years, you should go to massage school. You should become a massage therapist. You should become a massage therapist. I was like, okay, well, I have this money set aside and I'm going to use that to take the massage course. So that is what I did. I went to Calaveras College of Therapeutic Massage, and I studied under Michelle Oswalski, and I did her whole course, which was really scary for me, again, going back to anxiety, because one of the biggest anxieties that I have is school. Anything education related, I find quite terrifying. I had learning disabilities. I struggled in school. I was bullied in school. School wasn't a good place. And I found it quite terrifying. It wasn't a fun thing for me. So deciding to go back and study for anything was really scary. But I decided to go back and do the massage thing. While I was studying massage, I fully recognized this odd touch ability thing that I had. One of the things you do when you give massage is they call it grounding. So you put your hands on a person and you take a few breaths and you kind of become in tune with their body rhythm. You kind of develop a connection. And when I do that and I'm at peace and I'm in a good place, I put my hands on a person. What happens is if they've got something going on, a pain or a discomfort or, you know, stress in a part of their body, I feel it in my body. So let's say they've got a shoulder injury in their, let's say their left shoulder. So I put my hands on them and then I feel like a pressure on my own shoulder. I feel like it's not painful. It's not anything. It's like somebody just puts their hand on there and squeezes. And I know, I just instinctually knew that that meant that that shoulder was going to need some extra work. It just translated in my own body. It's like, oh, okay, I need to go to that area and I need to work it. So in the training, we learned, you know, the different muscles and we learned some basic technique and all of that. But then I had this weird additional instinct that would tell me what area I needed to focus on. And, at one point, Michelle says to the class, there is this thing that some people can do where they can detect energy and it's like this. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can do that. And she's like, really? And then like, yeah, I didn't know it was a thing. Like, it's a weird thing, right? And I don't talk a lot about my abilities as a healer. And, there's a couple of reasons. One, I don't want to be considered a weirdo because I know how weird it sounds. It's a really weird thing. And I'm also a very logical person. So I have a lot of trouble, reconciling the fact that it doesn't make a lot of logical sense to me. I don't have a scientific explanation for why I'm able to do this or how it works, but it's a weird skill that I have. So I got my certification and I opened up a lovely massage studio in Angels Camp. I didn't get a huge amount of business, but you know, I was working my way there and I was learning more about this weird energy connection that I had. And so I wound up taking a course in Reiki 1. You can learn more about Reiki. You can look into it. But basically, it's an energy healing technique. And I did not take Reiki to learn Reiki. I took the Reiki course so that when people said, "What are you doing?" I had some easy thing that I could just throw out there without going into an explanation or explaining to them the fact that I have no idea what I'm doing. This is a really weird thing. I don't know why it happens. I don't really understand it or where it came from. I just know that when it works, it works. So how it works or when it's working, what happens is, like I said, I put my hands on a person. I feel this pressure. I know that that area needs work, but then it goes beyond that. So I start working on them and working into that, you know, and do the full massage kind of thing. But then I say, you know, would you like me to focus more on your trouble areas, or do you just want a basic all over? Yeah, to work on the trouble. So I get in there and I start working on it. And oftentimes, when we have pain in the body, it is tied to an emotional experience, something that has happened in the past. So it might be that you actually have some mental distress that's linked with that particular actual injury, which has then become a chronic pain issue. So, you know, something obvious would be like, okay, when you were 10, your stepfather jerked you up by the arm and dislocated your shoulder. And now every time you have fear or you feel injustice or whatever, you suddenly start feeling tension in that shoulder, because it's like your body ties the emotions of the event to that location. And so that pain comes, it knows where to put the physical pain when you experience certain mental pain. But it can happen with other things too, which are unrelated. So let's say you're in the process of dealing with a divorce. And during that time at random, you sprain your knee, you know, you slip and fall or whatever, you sprain your knee. And you have a lot of pain in your knee at the same time you're dealing with this divorce issue. Well, in the future, when you have abandonment issues, you start feeling pain in that same knee. Your mind, when you feel stressed, decides to put the pain in a certain location in your body. So when I get in there to work on those areas of pain, a lot of times I would tap into this weird emotional connection too. One of the most dramatic occasions of that was a man who came to see me who was having chronic back pain. He was a firefighter. He'd been working a job and I guess he fell through a roof. The fire was going. He crashed through the roof. He injured his spine. It had required a whole lot of different therapies, different surgeries, different things. He was still struggling with it. And it had ended his career as a firefighter. And this guy, basically, he wanted to be a firefighter his whole life. Like his childhood, he dreamed of being a firefighter. That's all he ever wanted to do. And suddenly, at this injury, he had everything pulled out from under him. And it wasn't just financially. It was just like this was his identity. And so I started working on him, and as soon as I started working on him, I just felt, I didn't know all of this. I just, you know, I talked, so yeah, he'd been injured, whatever. But as I get into working on him, I feel this just profound sense of grief, just grief. It wasn't just physical pain. It was grief. So I start asking him questions and talking to him about, you know, how did this happen? What's going on kind of thing. And we talk our way through it. And he wound up just sobbing on the table, just this huge release of finally, you know, talking about it, experiencing it and letting it go. And as I'm talking to him, I'm working on the tight areas and working through it with my hands. And the other weird thing that happens when I tap into one of these things is my hands heat up. They just get suddenly very hot, which is sort of significant because I have low blood pressure. So I have cold hands and feet a lot. When I tap into this energy thing, my hands get really, really warm. They put off their own sense of heat. And that is one of the things that clients would most ask me about or bring it up. Because like I said, I find this ability weird. So a lot of times I wouldn't actually talk to them about what I wouldn't feel comfortable to discuss with them my technique or why exactly. I would just work through it and help them as best I could and just leave it at that. It's fine. You feel better. That's all that really matters, right? It doesn't matter. But this guy, it was a really profound experience. And he like apologized for crying. He's like, no, you know, let it out. Let it cry all you need to. Get it out of there. And when he got off the table, he said, this is the best I've felt in years. That the pain is so much better. I just feel so much better. And he actually called me later just to tell me just how like he felt cured. And I was like, great. That's awesome. Again, I don't know how it works. I don't know why it works. But I really, really loved it. I really loved being able to put my hands on people and help them work out their physical and emotional issues. I enjoyed that very much. But even as that was going on, my fibromyalgia was getting worse. And standing and giving a massage is very physically intense. So, yeah. So that was the beginning of my massage career. So after becoming a massage therapist, as all of this stuff is going on, my marriage was falling apart. And in 2004, I decided it just wasn't going to work anymore. My mother had bought a vacation place in Costa Rica, and she invited the kids and I to go for a visit. And so we went, we checked it out, and I decided I had to start over somewhere. Costa Rica was better cost of living, and I figured I could make some money working as a massage therapist. So in 2004, the kids and I packed up and we moved to Costa Rica. And once in Costa Rica, I did continue working as a massage therapist. I got a job at a hotel called the Tambor Tropical, and I was on call. It was their only massage therapist on call. So I didn't get a lot of work. It was kind of random because it wasn't their main thing. But sometimes I would get a huge amount of business all at once, and because it was kind of hard too, because it would be like, no massage. And then I would get a call saying, could you do 4 massages today? And I was like, yeah, of course I can. Yeah, what else am I going to do? I need the money. So I started out working as a massage therapist, but then I wound up starting a newspaper. And I am not very good about doing things halfway. So this was 16 pages, full color tabloid. And I was the writer, the editor, the photographer, the restaurant review person. I had a center page, which was a kid's page, and it included like a crossword, and then it had a maze, it had a dot dot. I mean, I included like little children's activities too, because I figured there'd be tourists and kids would want to do that. So I also sold the advertising. I did distribution, the whole 9 yards. I did the design, the layout, the everything. And it was a once a month thing. And I managed to do that for 6 months before I finally gave up and said, this is insane. But it was way too much work for one human being to make happen. And so, yeah, so that went by the wayside. But there was this one house on Tambor Beach, mansion house. The guy was so impressed with the fact that this paper had been done that he actually bought a copy of every one of them, all 6 of them, and had them framed in glass in like, it's double-sided glass where you could flip it over to see the backside. And he hung them up in his house on Tambor Beach. So I'm honored that, that it was there. And, I have to interrupt this, this narrative to tell you something else about myself. In case you have not guessed, Esperanza Phoenix is not my birth name. I changed my name because my birth name reminded me too much of the people who had given birth to me and raised me, and there was a lot of trauma there. So every time I heard my name, it kind of brought that back, and it was a thing, and I needed to start over. So I birthed myself from the ashes, and I renamed myself, and I chose this name because Esperanza means hope in Spanish, and a phoenix is a bird that rises from their own ashes. So that's where my name came from. So if you do track down a copy of the Tambor Times, you're going to see another name there. That's my dead name, but is me. So just in case you happen to track that down. And there's another publication I'm going to mention too. And again, you won't see Esperanza Phoenix on it because that was before I changed my name. So in addition to doing the newspaper thing in Costa Rica, I took a job with a real estate company, and I started working for RE/MAX in Tambor. And the reason I started working in real estate was actually because I had seen a lot of people get ripped off in Costa Rica. They have some lax laws about stuff, and I didn't want to see anybody get ripped off. I thought, you know, I could work in real estate, and then I can make sure that we're being honest about the list price and sure that people aren't getting cheated. So I took a job at this real estate company, and the owners promised that I would be educated in how to properly sell real estate and all of that. That never came to pass. So I would go into the office, and because the owners didn't speak Spanish, in fact, the only people they really knew who spoke Spanish were their employees. So they didn't really have any. It was weird. Some expats are weird. They like relocate to a place, and then they're like disrespectful of the people that live there, and they don't learn the language, and it's strange to me. But anyways, so because I spoke the language and I had connections in the community, they would send me out trying to get listings. So trying to find houses and stuff that were inexpensive, so that investors who wanted to start out could afford to get in. What I didn't know was they weren't honest either. And they were adding crazy commissions onto the cost of the homes. And then that commission would go straight to them. And therefore, the seller wasn't making as much of the selling price. It was a thing. And things got shadier and fell apart. And in the end, I wound up walking out and taking several folders, which I wasn't supposed to do, but I took the folders of the listings that I had brought them because I didn't want to see my Costa Rican friends get tied up into that mess. And it was really hard too, because I was really good friends with their secretary, and I didn't want her to get in trouble or them to think that she was any part of what I'd done to get out of there. And after I left, I actually wrote a letter to the RE/MAX Corporation. I explained to them the unethical practices that were taking place at that RE/MAX office, and they pulled their license. They lost their business. They were shut down. And I guess when the owners, like I said, I was friends with the secretary. And when the owners shut the place down, they actually blamed me. And they said it was my fault. I was the one who shut them down. And you know what? Good. Good. They were crooks, and they were ripping people off. So I'm quite proud of myself that my letter had the power to shut them down and prevent other people from being victims to that real estate scam that was going. I was just really upset that I had unknowingly participated in some of what happened there. So that was a lot of drama. As I was working in real estate, I was still doing the massage, and I would also get odd jobs. So some of the weird odd jobs that I worked in Costa Rica included getting hired as a driver and a translator for somebody who had invested in a property in Costa Rica. He couldn't speak to his workers and he didn't have a vehicle. It was going to cost him a lot to rent one. He also liked to drink. So having somebody drive was a handy thing too. So he hired me, and that was one of those cases where I really needed the money at the time too, because we wanted to make a trip to the States, which was often kind of hard to afford. It came at the perfect time, and I made I think I made $1,000 in several weeks, which was like a whole lot for me at the time. But I did that by driving for him several hours a day and doing all of his phone calls for him and his negotiating and helping him out at the hardware store and anywhere else that he needed to communicate in Spanish because he didn't speak the language. So that was cool. I would also get hired side jobs as a tourist guide because I was giving massages to people who were coming into town and they would ask me, you know, what's cool to see? What can you show us? And I'd say, you know what? Pay me $50 and I will take you to this super cool location that only locals know about. And so like one of them was this wonderful petrified forest. And I'm not going to tell you where it is. But if you contact me, take me to Costa Rica, I'll give you a private tour. So I would do some random tours too and translating for people who came into town as well. At that time, I had started growing tired of Costa Rica. And one of the things I didn't cover was my Costa Rican husband. Yeah, that was a mistake. We're not going to go into it right now. But my daughter, by now, was a teenager. I was concerned that my daughter would be influenced by the Costa Rican culture, and all of her friends in high school expected to just get married and have somebody take care of them. But my daughter really wanted to graduate from high school and graduate from college and go on to have a career and all of that. So I knew she needed to come back to the States in order to make that work. And I was working that way. So I went back to school. And I was still attending online college when we finally moved back to California. I would go on to get my degree, and then getting my degree, trying to find some sort of work that I could do. And I took the CBEST test, which then allowed me to become a substitute teacher. But I also started working as an arts instructor for the charter school that my children had begun attending when we returned to the States. And so I was working in both of those jobs, and I started volunteering at our local arts council. So while volunteering at the local arts council, they decided that they were going to reinstitute their newsletter. They hadn't actually published a printed newsletter in many years. And so they knew that I had some graphics experience, and they asked if I would like to do that. And I said, of course, that would be wonderful. So I started being their newsletter editor, and the experience that I had at the print shop, all of that really came in handy. Well, that reminds me. Okay, so there's a job that I left out. Somewhere before the restaurant, I applied for a DJ job at the local radio station, and I didn't get the DJ job. But when they had reviewed my previous experience, they saw that I had graphics work. So they did hire me because they also owned SignPro. So I wound up making vinyl signs. So I was designing the vinyl signs, and then I also had to do sign installation, and I did that for a while as well. I digress. Anyways, the reason I bring it up is because that graphics experience at both of those situations, plus doing the crazy newspaper thing that I did in Costa Rica, had given me quite a bit of experience for layout and photography and editing and all of the stuff I needed to be a newsletter editor. So that was kind of convenient. And I stepped into the newsletter editor job. While I was there, they had an opening for a director of CASA, Kids Arts Study Academy. They were going to be offering arts classes, and they asked me to do the job. And my anxiety immediately said, are you insane? I don't know what I'm doing. I've never run anything. I have no clue how to do this. I mean, that's just, are you crazy? I said, well, you're substitute teaching and you have all this experience, and I'm the director said, I'm going to be with you every step of the way. And the person who is in charge of our outreach to education, she's going to be there every step of the way. They're going to help you. We're going to help you to figure this out and work through it and figure out how to, you know, construct the classes and do all of this stuff. And then they didn't at all. At all. I was just thrown in to suddenly being the director of this arts academy, and I had no fucking clue what I was doing. I kid you not. I did not know. I wound up having to learn how to do QuickBooks in order to show the budgeting things. I had to keep weird track of my time. Luckily, when I was doing real estate, as awful as those people were, one of the owners had told me to always keep a planner in detail what you do throughout the day so you can keep track of things. And I needed that so bad, because what would happen is, it was the Arts Council. So it was a nonprofit and they have a board of directors and they have to keep track of time and everything. And I was doing multiple jobs. So first I was the newsletter editor, but also I was the director of CASA. And then additionally, I had been asked to help with a program called Poetry Out Loud, which is a wonderful program. Look it up. It gets children excited about poetry. They have a national competition each year. It's a really a beautiful thing. So then they had me working for, I was being paid through budgets for different purposes. And at one point they're like, well, how much time? And I was like, oh, I've got my planner. I spent this much time on this much time on that much time on the other thing. And, all of these oddball skills that I had gained throughout the years all came in handy, because I don't think that they could have gotten somebody else in that position who not only could design the newsletter, do the photography, do the editing, do the layout. I also designed flyers that would go to the school and bookmarks to advertise the classes. I was able to draw up the schedules and then send that information to our web designer, who would put that on there. And then I had to find various teachers for classes, do the sign-up stuff, and then I taught some of the classes. One of the classes that I really enjoyed the most teaching was comic book style illustration, because I was drawing on what I'd learned about narration when I really wanted to do children's books. And then comic books kind of relate in that. So it's telling a story with pictures. And it was a lot of fun doing that with teenagers. And they would come up with their own story plot and their characters and their little comic book thing. That was a lot of fun. The most challenging thing I did was I was suddenly put in charge of the summer arts camp. And I didn't know anything. I was completely from scratch. And that was a really disappointing thing, because the woman who was in charge of the arts outreach had actually put on arts camps before. So she had experience. She should have come to me and been like, okay, this is the down low. Here's the basics. But she didn't. And I'm not good at asking for help, partly because of my childhood. I didn't get a lot of help when I asked. So good at it. I'm getting better. So I wound up designing this full schedule of art classes. It included dance. It included music. I had several guest instructors with various art projects. And then I took it a step further, and lunch was culinary arts. And the kids got to help create their food. I did these really cool snacks, and you can look up online, like things where, like I took a pear, half pears, and you turn them into like a puppy and you use like raisins for the eyes and stuff. Super cute. The kids had a great time. It really went off very well. It was a huge success. But there were some things that I got very wrong, and well, part of it is I had no idea what I was doing. But the main part of it is I don't know how to keep my mouth shut. And at the time, the only thing that allowed me to continue doing that job was cannabis, which is 100% legal and recreational in California. But I decided to go to the county supervisors and tell them how I felt about it because they were having a lot of cannabis restrictions in my hometown and preventing dispensaries. And there was a big controversy going on about it. And access to cannabis was the only reason I was able to attend work at all because my pain was so bad. And my insomnia is so bad that without it, I don't sleep enough. And then I hurt a lot. So CBD and cannabis are key to me being able to function at all. So I went to the county supervisors and I had my say about the situation. And I think I may have made some inway because at the end of the conversation, one of the older supervisors actually called me up because I had described how I took it, that I take the tincture under the tongue and, you know, it's not about getting high. I tried to talk to them about it. I mean, I don't have anything wrong with getting high either, clearly. But the point is, it is medicine and it's an elderly community there too. And a lot of people really need their medicine and their regulations were preventing people who are housebound or whatever from being able to access something they really needed. And using cannabis as a painkiller also prevents people from using opioids and having bigger problems. So it's really important to me. And I spoke my mind and I got scolded for it and told I'm not allowed to discuss that because I work with people's kids and they're going to think this or they're going to think that. And my position wound up getting eliminated. And it was, I'm sure, in part because of my vocal support for cannabis, which is really unfortunate. I wound up going back to massage. I wound up getting a job for a new yoga place in town, Soul E-Breath. Lovely woman, lovely business. And she really appreciated my skills as not just a massage therapist, but as a healer. And she really wanted to promote my healing. But I wasn't prepared to do that. Because like I said, it's a weird skill. How do you market something like that? I don't want people to feel conned or whatever. I know I can do what I can do. And I love doing it when I get the opportunity. But again, I feel weird marketing it. And I know part of it too is that my father was a major con artist. And, in addition to being an artist, he was a con artist. He would con people out of their cars and different, you know, he had scams that he would run. And, he was really good at reading people. I'm also really good at reading people. And I think part of that is, you know, self-preservation because of my childhood. But, because of that, I cringed every time she would refer to me as a healer. And I don't know how to accept that, but that's how it was. But the massage itself had become very taxing on me. I had been lucky at the Arts Alliance that they had me working part-time. And if I needed to work from home, I could because my fibromyalgia pain had gotten so much worse that the only way I could cope was with cannabis, and I still needed scheduling exceptions. And with the massage therapy, I couldn't do, wouldn't do more than 2 or 3 massages a day. And then if I did that many massages, I would have to have a couple of days off because it was too hard on my body and I would be in pain. And that's when I realized how long I'd been working around my disability. Trying to make it work, figuring it out, working part-time, working odd schedules, with concessions, whatever, trying to make it work. So that's when I finally said, you know, it's time to apply for disability. It would take 3 years and an attorney before I finally got through that. So I left Soul E-Breath and I left Sonora when my boyfriend got a job in the Bay and invited me to join him. And I was in the Bay for a while, not being able to quite find a job that worked around my pain and my issues, my anxiety. I tried driving for Lyft and Uber, and Yeah. My limited frame of when I could drive, because I don't drive during rush hour because of the anxiety. And then I realized I don't cope well with the pressure of driving somebody to a location that I've never been, because I'm like, oh, what if I take them to the wrong place? What if I take them too long? What if they get to the airport too late? What if? And the anxiety was overwhelming. So that wasn't going to happen. I was an extra in a couple of movies because being in the Bay Area, I had a little more access to that. And because of that, I was signed up for one of the casting sites, which occasionally sends out announcements of jobs which are somewhat performance related. So I get something from the casting call people that said that they were hiring a bubbleologist. That's a bubbleologist, right? A bubbleologist is someone who does bubble performances for kids, and it's part science and it's part performance, and you gotta know kids and you gotta like kids. And so I was like, okay, let's give it a try. So I applied to be a bubbleologist, and actually the guy who hired me to be a bubbleologist, I interviewed him, Aiden Park, and he did this wonderful book, The Art of Being Yay. So one of my podcasts is about The Art of Being Yay, and it is an interview with the guy who hired me to be a bubbleologist. And because they were able to work around my crazy thing. It's like I can only do a certain number of shows, and I can't drive to a show during rush hour because the anxiety would have me like on edge so bad by the time I got there, I couldn't perform. So, you know, leaving during rush hour and being trapped in traffic for 2 hours on the way home, okay, that I can handle. I just can't handle it on the way to the show. So I worked as a bubbleologist for a couple of years, very part-time, was nice extra income. It was a lot of fun with the kids. Still dealing with a lot of anxiety. And my disability did go through. I was able to, you know, work minimally to supplement my disability insurance, and that was all fine. And after I left Bubbleology, I saw an advertisement for somebody to be a wine and paint instructor. And I thought that was just up my alley, right? You know, I could work with people. I love that. I could do paint instruction. There's wine. That's always good. So I went and I auditioned for this wine and paint instruction job, which I got. They hired me. Seemed like a good idea. But I would have to do 3 to 4 hour stints standing on a concrete floor. And it just brought back to me how much I have to do to accommodate my disability in order to avoid extreme pain. And I did one shift and went home hurting and realized that I wasn't going to be able to make it work. And it was really disappointing, actually. I thought, you know, maybe this is it, but not so much. So here we are. I'm doing my podcast. I do stand up occasionally. Well, at least I did when we were in a pandemic, because it's something that I really enjoy. I do storytelling. I do motivational speaking, and I have my Etsy shop. You can find my art there. I encourage you, please check out Esperanza Paints. Check out my artwork. That is my main source of income. And if you love this podcast, please subscribe. Sign up for it so that you know when I drop a new pod. And if you absolutely love it, buy me a cup of coffee. I'll provide a link. All of the jobs that I've done over the years, I guess I could focus on all the jobs that I've quit or all the failures. I choose to focus on the sheer number of things I've tried and the experiences that I've had. Fear has ended many a job or career possibility for me, as has pain. But because of the extreme anxiety that I was facing, every one of those things that I tried was an act of bravery. It may sound crazy, but I have a weird fear of paperwork. So just filling out a job application for me was an act of bravery. Anxiety is a weird thing. it must seem strange to some people that I can be afraid of paperwork, but okay with getting up on stage and doing a comedy set, right? Weird. I have acquired an impressive amount of random knowledge. I've raised multiple wild animals. I knit, I crochet, I do multiple forms of art. I paint, I sculpt. I'm doing this podcast. Obviously, I have graphics experience. I just had to design a new business card for my arts. And actually, on my list, I've got to do another one for my entertainment, motivational speaking stuff. I still need to do that. I do the massage and the hands-on healing work. Doesn't come into play very often, but I love doing it. I work with kids. I have a special way with animals. I'm a very well-rounded person. But sadly, due to my disabilities and my limitations, most of my talents have not been especially financially beneficial to me. But I hope you enjoyed hearing about them. It doesn't seem especially bizarre to me until I start comparing notes with other people. And then I realize, yeah, my life's been a little weird. So I do contemplate the idea of one day writing a novel. So if you agree and you think that I should write a novel, let me know. If I have enough audience, maybe I'll do that. If you are not watching this podcast, again, I highly encourage you to do so. I think this visual is going to come out pretty fun. I don't know what I'll do next time for those of you who are watching, but I'll try to keep it interesting. And in the comments, tell me if you tell me just how many hats you saw. We'll have a debate about that. So like it, comment, become engaged. For those of you watching, this will be my final costume change. You guys can argue amongst yourselves whether or not this counts as a hat. For those of you listening, this is my awesome plague mask because everybody should have a plague mask during a pandemic. Thank you so much for taking the time to watch and listen to Unpacking Life's Crazy. I hope you'll tune in again next time for the next episode. And in the meantime, stay safe, stay healthy, and take care of the ones you love. That's going to do it for today's episode of Unpacking Life's Crazy. If you'd like to learn more about this episode, our guests, or anything else related to Unpacking Life's Crazy, check out the podcast page of my website, esperanzaphoenix.com. To support what I do here, please consider purchasing some of my artwork, either at my Etsy store, esperanzapaints.com, or at espphoenix.redbubble.com. Last but not least, I want to offer a special thanks to Chelsea Wild, the talented musician who composed the theme for this podcast. To find more of Chelsea's wonderful music, visit minorbirds.info. Remember to subscribe if you want to be notified the next time we release an episode. And until then, take care of yourself and those that you love.